Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Today we're talking about two of the most exciting teams in football, the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns. Haven't been able to say those teams are exciting in a while, but they are. We're going to be talking to Jake Trotter and Marcel Louis-Jacques, our two beat writers covering those teams at ESPN, in a moment. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to quickly tell you about another special ESPN podcast. It's 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. It's a standalone audio documentary that tells the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans. It's told by those who lived the events of that day, and it's built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And here's our show, and here's Jake Trotter talking about the Cleveland Browns. All right, joining me here now, as promised, on the Bill Barnwell Show, talk all things Browns and a very interesting team, and even more interesting after the results we saw on Monday night with the Steelers losing. Joining me to talk about all things Browns, the excellent beat reporter for us at ESPN, Jake Trotter. Jake, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. Good to be on the show.
I feel like we've had you on a few times now. Had you on last year before the season. There was plenty of optimism surrounding the Browns that was unfounded. Had you on in the middle of the season. Things were not as exciting. And now we have you here. And we're really close. I mean, the Browns, who have not made the playoffs since 2002, have an 89% chance of making the playoffs, according to the upshot. If they beat the Jets this weekend, which is not as hard as it looked last week, and either the Ravens, the Dolphins, or the Colts lose, the Cleveland Browns will have clinched a playoff spot for the first time since 2002. So, Jake, let's start with this. You, of course, interact with Browns fans all the time. You have your sense of what the sentiment is in Cleveland. Do Browns fans actually believe this is the year? Or do you get a sense that they're still expecting that 11% chance to come in and something to somehow go horribly wrong over the final 2 weeks of the year? Do the Browns fans believe?
They believe, but they are definitely looking at the different scenarios in which the Browns somehow don't make the playoffs. And they still exist. It's not 100% chance. I think FPI, the Football Power Index, has it at 90.7. But until it's 100.0, Browns fans are going to, in the back of their minds, wait for this to somehow go wrong. I mean, they are Browns fans. They have been traumatized too much going back to the playoff runs of the 1980s. But if you watch this team with your eyes, they look like a playoff team. They look like a team that could win a game, maybe two, in the playoffs. I think outside Kansas City in the AFC, they are playing about as well as anybody. Maybe Buffalo too, but they're playing about as well as anybody in the AFC right now. They're playing their best football at the right time of the year. They have gotten better as the season has gone along, mostly because their quarterback has gotten better as the season has gone along. And they have some weaknesses, to be sure. It's not a perfect team, but you feel like right now that they can score on pretty much anybody in the NFL, and they can score a lot of different ways, whether it be Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt on the ground or Baker Mayfield and their ever-growing, dangerously play-action passes downfield. So mm-hmm. it is not a complete football team, but it is looking like a complete team, at least offensively, and that makes them dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's start with that offense. So let's start with the guy everyone is talking about right now in Baker Mayfield. And let's be honest. I mean, it's hard to argue with that praise when you look at the numbers. Over the last month of the season, Baker Mayfield has led the Browns to 3 victories in 4 games. And of course, did so much to lead them back to a victory against the Ravens. Just came up narrowly short, but brought them back in the fourth quarter. He's posted a passer rating of 117.7 over the last month. 10 touchdowns against just one pick. The driving force in that crucial victory over Tennessee. So as someone who watches this team closely, do you think Baker's made significant strides over the last month? And what do you attribute that sort of recent improvement to? Or is it something where he's just been this good all year and the numbers are just kind of catching up to how he's been playing?
Well, the sample size is not so small anymore. I mean, right. If you go back to week 7 against the Cincinnati Bengals, the game that Odell Beckham Jr. was hurt on, by the way, mm-hmm. Baker in that first quarter was 0-5 with an interception. And even if you include that first quarter, since week 7, there are only 2 quarterbacks in the NFL with a higher QBR.
Wow.
One of them is Patrick Mahomes. The other one is Aaron Rodgers. That is it. And if you look at the entirety of the season, Baker is 5th in the NFL in QBR. So, you know, at the end of the day, the numbers tell the story. And I thought coming into the year that Baker was going to struggle a little bit early on. I mean, you got to remember, Kevin Stefanski is his 4th head coach since he was drafted in 2018. He's mm-hmm. learning another offense. Oh, by the way, they're having a virtual offseason mm-hmm. and a shortened training camp. So not just Baker. I thought the entire Browns offense would struggle a little bit, you know, maybe through the first month or two of the season. And what happened was, after they got destroyed by Baltimore in the opener, mm-hmm. the offense really found its rhythm, the running game. So they look good offensively, really, from week 2 on because of the improved offensive line, the work they put in this offseason, solidifying mm-hmm. the tackle position with Cedric Wills and Jack Conklin, and then obviously with Chubb and Hunt and how dynamic they are as a pairing. So that part I was wrong about because mm-hmm. the running game has really been good from the very beginning. But what I was right about is that Baker, it took him a month or two to really find his way in this offense because, you know, he's been through so much turmoil so far. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we try to decide whether this is, you know, a mirage or not, the way he's played the last couple of months, he was the number one pick in the draft for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, he had incredible accuracy throughout his Oklahoma career. It's not mm-hmm. like the accuracy you've seen lately, you know, he's never demonstrated before. So I think he's found a excellent partnership in Stefanski, who understands Baker's strengths mm-hmm. and knows how to utilize him. Baker is growing more confident every week. We can debate whether, you know, he's more comfortable without Odell out there, not mm-hmm. Odell's fault, but, you know, he's just reading the defense and making the right throws. And when you have a running game, you know, to flank you, like the one that the Browns have as a quarterback, it just makes things so much easier. So, I think this is real. I don't think this is fake. And I think that because of the way that Baker is playing this, you know, the long-term outlook for the Browns, not just this year, is completely different than the way it looked just 2 months ago. Because if you don't have a quarterback in the NFL, you've got no chance. I think the Browns have that guy.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things to unpack there. And I think that, you know, to your point, you look at Baker's sort of stretch this season. It was a, you know, really the first 6 weeks of the year, he was had some good games, but against the Ravens, he really struggled in week 1 when they got behind early. Steelers, of course, great defense, really forced some mistakes out of Baker Mayfield. Had a really nice game against the Bengals, who Bengals are in a great defense. Yeah, what we saw last night, maybe aside, but then that 3-game right. stretch, you know, people may have forgotten or may not have noticed the weather in those 3 games, or I believe in at least 2 of those 3 games, was abysmal. I mean, it was a brutal.
It was all 3 games. Weather. I mean, all 3 games, you could barely walk to your car, much less go. And I know this because I was there trying to walk to my car, and it was an absolute nightmare weather-wise. So, of course, you know, he's not going to put up big numbers in those games. But go ahead.
Yeah, right. And then, you know, you figure maybe we would have had a longer, a bigger sample if there had been better weather in those three games against the Raiders, the Texans, and the Eagles, who are not great pass defenses by any means. But then, of course, now the weather sort of turns around. The schedule has been tougher. Ravens have a good defense. Giants have a good defense. Jaguars, not so much. And Tennessee, I think, very susceptible to play action. But with the weather improving, we've seen him play much better and certainly put up much bigger numbers over the last month of this season. Now, I was going to ask you about this. Might as well do it now. I feel like we have to at least have this conversation. And I want to know what you think, again, as someone who watches the team very closely. The numbers say Baker Mayfield has been better without Odell Beckham. Last month of the season, Baker Mayfield has been great. Odell Beckham has been on the sideline. We've seen guys like Donovan Peoples-Jones making plays for the Browns. So do you believe that the Browns offense is better with Odell Beckham on the field or with Donovan Peoples-Jones, whoever's replacing Odell Beckham, but with Odell Beckham on the sidelines, injured or not on the active roster?
So I can't say that the Browns offense is necessarily better, because just Odell Beckham standing out wide changes the way that defenses are going to play Cleveland. And, you know, the running game, I think, is a little bit tougher when you don't have to, you don't have a defense committing so much attention and so many resources to stopping Odell Beckham. And you know, I think even in the Ravens game, you could just tell that, you know, this was different than the way that they lined up against Cleveland the first time around. But, and I wrote about it after the injury, that before we saw what happened, that I thought that Baker Mayfield would be a better quarterback without Odell Beckham on the field. And there's just something, and it's not, I'm not blaming anybody. You know, sometimes, you know, the chemistry, the, you know, just doesn't, it doesn't work out the way you hoped it would. And for whatever reason, they just have not been on the same page since they made the trade before last season. Now, I mean, I can read you all the numbers. It's not even close. Baker's efficiency with Odell on the field versus without on the field, not on the field. And, you know, I can, you know, anecdotally, there's been some incidents where, you know, Baker will throw the ball up to Odell just because it's Odell. The first pass of that Cincinnati game, Baker just throws it up to Odell. He's got Jarvis Landry wide open on a curl route on the other side of the field, but doesn't even look at him because he's fixated on Odell. The pass gets picked off. They came back and ran the same play, I believe, in the third quarter, and it's a first down because Baker makes the right play because Jarvis is open, and Rashard Higgins, he's not concerned with throwing the ball up to because it's Rashard Higgins. So, I mean, they're going to have an interesting decision to make. This offseason, their hands are kind of tied because of the injury. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, Odell's still got to, you know, rehabilitate the knee. But to me, I mean, forget the eye test. You just look at the numbers. Baker has been a better quarterback without Odell. And I don't know that they would be the kind of offense they are right now if Odell Beckham hadn't gotten hurt. I mean, you just, it's hard to ignore the difference in Baker since the Beckham injury.
I mean, yeah. Like, you know, is it 100% totally clear to say that Odell left and the Browns improved because of it? No, I think that's tough. But like the data is the data. I mean, you know, like they are much better without him on the field. I mean, do you get a sense that the Browns organization feels that way as well?
That's a tough question. I don't know what Andrew Berry, the general manager, how he feels about it. You know, he's not the one who traded for Odell. That was John Dorsey. So he's not, you know, personally, individually invested the way that the previous regime would have been. I mean, at the end of the day, forget Odell and whether, you know, Baker's better with him or without him. I mean, they have so much money committed to the wide receiver position between him and Jarvis Landry. And at the end of the day, the Browns are a running team. And I think, you know, they would like to keep Nick Chubb, even though they have Kareem Hunt for the next two seasons. You know, the combination of the two is what makes them so good, more so than, you know, Kareem Hunt individually. Mm-hmm. So that they're going to have to make those decisions anyway. But I just, you feel like this team, the core is Myles Garrett, it's Denzel Ward, it's Baker, the offensive line, and the running backs. And, you know, Odell is down the list in terms of, I think, you know, how you see this team proceeding going forward long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Now, of course, one of the biggest changes for the Browns this offseason was the hiring of Kevin Stefanski as their head coach. Of course, they brought in Bill Callahan, changes up and down the staff, of course. So many additions, but Stefanski, of course, being the head coach would seem like the biggest one. I know it's difficult to separate out, you know, Baker's improvement versus Stefanski's influence, but when you look at what the changes have been over the course of the last year, how much of Baker's improvement do you think you'd realistically chalk up to just Baker getting better as a player? And how much of it would you chalk up to Stefanski maybe making it easier for Baker to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's everything. Alex Van Pelt, too, their offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, who used to coach Aaron Rodgers at Green Bay as well. It's not just Baker, it's not just Stefanski, it's both of them together and what they, you know, the work they put in this offseason and the trust that they have. In one another, developed in one another. I mean, I go back to, you know, before, you know, the world changed back in February, shortly after, you know, taking the job, Kevin Stefanski flew down to Austin and, you know, met with Baker's family, met with Baker. They went out to dinner together that night. Coincidentally, Ed Stefanski, who's an executive with the Detroit Pistons, Kevin's dad just happened to be in Austin on a scouting trip. And, you know, he stopped by and said hello to Baker at dinner. And, you know, family is very important to Baker. You know, at one point during the shutdown, he was actually living with his parents, with his wife, you know, as he had his house renovated there in Austin. And I think just, you know, having Kevin in that setting really set a foundation for Baker. And you can understand why he would be maybe a little bit wary to trust another head coach here. And I know that, you know, Josh McDaniels, when Baker was coming into the draft in 2018, you know, he flew down there to see Baker and say, hey, you know, if you drop, you know, we as the Patriots might be interested in trading up for you. And I think when Josh's name came up for the job, you know, Baker was very, you know, interested in that possibility. So not having any background with Stefanski, not knowing who this guy was at all, you know, for Kevin to get in there and really start building the trust with Baker from the beginning, I think has paid off dividends even now. And, you know, you can just, they have a terrific rapport. And, you know, Baker has, you know, kind of taken back that mantle as the leader of the team in the locker room. I think it was hard for him to do at times last year when he was struggling so much. And, you know, they are kind of a like a boring team. And I say that in a good way because, you know, Stefanski Zoom calls, they almost want to put you to sleep because he's just so, you know, consistent and steadfast. And, you know, I think they've taken on that identity as a team, which is pretty remarkable considering he hasn't even been there a year yet. So I think that Stefanski, just from a chemistry standpoint, has made a huge difference for Baker and that locker room. And then I think, you know, Baker getting him outside the pocket and getting him in position to make the plays that he's confident in making and being creative in doing that is, you know, a big reason why the Browns are in the position they are and why Baker has made such a dramatic turnaround here these last couple of months.
That was going to be my next question, actually. You mentioned that Browns fans have fallen in love with coaches before, only to have their love go sour pretty quickly with Freddie Kitchens as OC and then head coach being the most recent, I suppose, example. So is there a reason to think that this affinity for Kevin Stefanski after his 10-4 start might be any different than those fleeting moments of affection in the past?
I do. One big reason, and this was the buzzword that ownership used when they made the change after this last season, and it was alignment. And you've seen so many different Browns regimes where the general manager is feuding with the head coach, who's feuding with the offensive coordinator, who's feuding with the quarterback, who's feuding with the, I mean, it just, you know, you can't have a winning football team when not everybody is on the same page. And that's what they have now. You know, Paul V. Podesta, you know, went out and, you know, handpicked Kevin Stefanski. He led the coaching search, ownership. The Haslams have a tremendous trust in Dee Podesta. And then after they got Stefanski together, they went out and got Andrew Berry. So everybody has had kind of a hand in the individual that's in their current spot. And then, you know, I think that goes down to the quarterback as well, where Baker is completely bought in with, you know, everybody from Andrew Berry to Kevin Stefanski. So they just have a certain army that has been fleeting in Cleveland really since the team came back in 1999. And there's no reason to believe that, you know, even if, you know, let's say they lose to the Jets this weekend, and, you know, the Browns' worst nightmares come true, they're not making wholesale changes this offseason like, you know, has been their way in the past. So I think that there is finally the possibility for stability going forward, even if, you know, there might be some setbacks here and there.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that alignment would come stability typically. And looking at what the future holds for the Cleveland Browns, you'd figure Kevin Stefanski and Drew Berry are going to be around for a while. Baker Mayfield comes up. Baker Mayfield, of course, now is eligible for an extension after this upcoming season, as he finishes his third year in the NFL, quarterbacks become eligible for extensions. I think we're going to see Lamar Jackson get a deal with the Ravens. Wouldn't be shocking if Josh Allen, who we're going to talk about in a minute here with Marcel Louis Jacques, is going to be eligible for an extension and get one from the Buffalo Bills. Josh Rosen not getting a deal. Sam Darnold probably not getting a long-term deal. Do you think Baker Mayfield has done enough over this season for the Browns to commit to him on a long-term extension this offseason?
So you tell me, Bill, if you let's take the name Baker Mayfield out of it. If you have a guy, let's say he finishes top five QBR on the season, yet he's broken a number of franchise records, you know, already this year, particularly for games. And let's say this quarterback who finishes top five QBR takes you to your first playoff appearance in 18 years. How do you not?
It's a fair question. I mean, I guess the only thing I could say is that you could maybe sit here and say, hey, we're going to be a run first football team. We want to spend money elsewhere. We're going to keep our quarterback situation relatively cheap. But, you know, Baker's holding up his end of the bargain. It's not like they are, you know, just run, and then Baker's not throwing. I think we've seen over the last month, Baker's not only throwing efficiently, but also throwing for meaningful volume. So I think that is likely, you know, unless if Baker totally collapses over the next 3 weeks of the season or the next 2 weeks of the regular season and they miss the playoffs or Baker has a disastrous game in the playoffs, maybe that would be the case. But I do think it's likely that, you know, the Browns do extend Baker Mayfield this year. It makes the most financial sense to extend him as early as possible if you think he's the guy. At the same time, I mean, we've seen, you know, the Eagles with Carson Wentz, where they thought they had a franchise quarterback and they were getting that deal. The Rams with Jared Goff, maybe not regretting it quite as much, but certainly, you know, a guy who has been very inconsistent this year can be a very dangerous thing. But I do think that Baker, you know, has done enough to kind of convince the decision makers in Cleveland that he's going to be the guy.
And I think two things, Bill, you know, these decisions are not made without context and not in a vacuum. And
sure,
Cleveland has had 30 starting quarterbacks since 1999. And when you think about that and you think about the possibility of having, you know, your first franchise quarterback since Bernie Kosar was there, I mean, that is not easy to understate. That should not be understated. And then, you know, the other part of it, and I wondered about this when they made, you know, all the changes in the front office, the coaching staff, like how in are they on Baker after, you know, he had a bad season last year. He just wasn't very good. And every move that they made, from hiring Kevin Stefanski to drafting Jedrick Wills to going out and signing Austin Hooper, every move that they made was about better supporting Baker Mayfield on the field. So, you know, even though they had a new general manager in Andrew Berry, they never wavered institutionally in their belief that Baker could be that guy. I mean, they went out and signed Case Keenum, and Case can win games as a backup, but the reason they went out and got Case Keenum is because they thought he would be an awesome mentor for Baker. You know, they have similar backgrounds, both played for Cliff Kingsbury, you know, air raid guys from Texas, and, you know, similar, you know, height and style of play, all of that. So everything that they did this offseason was not about, like, how can we move on from Baker? It was about how can we better support Baker and give him a chance to be the guy. Now he's showing you that he's the guy. I just think that all of the momentum right now has gone from, you know, from the Cincinnati game to now, all of the momentum is, you know, not only picking up the fifth year option, which I think at one point was kind of a question mark, to I think the extension seems more likely than not at this point.
I agree. Finishing up with the Browns here, in terms of what happens next, if we make the assumption that the Browns do make it to the postseason for the first time since 2002, is that enough for Browns fans, you think? Do you think that merely making it to the postseason would satisfy them after this sort of, you know, almost 20-year wait for a postseason berth? Or do you think that they have to make a more significant run for Browns fans to sit here and think that this has been a successful season?
No, if they make the playoffs, this is a success. I said it before the season, you know, go 9-7, get into the playoffs. When you haven't been in almost two decades, everything at this point would be gravy. You know, if you win a playoff game, that's awesome. But if they just get to the playoffs, this to me would be a, especially given all the challenges with the new head coach and the, you know, unprecedented offseason, this to me would be a huge success. And here's the thing, the Browns are not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. All their guys are young. All their guys are in their early 20s. All their guys are under contract. They are not going anywhere. We've seen, you know, the Steelers look a little bit creaky here of late. You know, I think Joe Burrow with the Bengals, they have an exciting future. And, you know, the Ravens are the Ravens. But I think the Browns in the AFC have a chance to be a force to be reckoned with for years to come. So to me, you get to the playoffs this year, you take that first step. That would be, for a franchise that hasn't been in so long, a hugely successful season, in my opinion.
Makes sense. Well, Jake, as the Browns go over these next 2 weeks and as they head into a possible postseason appearance, where can people check out all the work you do?
Yeah, Bill, ESPN.com, Jake_Trotter on Twitter, and I will be writing and posting a lot here in the coming weeks. Should be a very interesting close to the NFL season in Cleveland.
Awesome. Jake, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we're going to come back with Marcel Louis-Jacques talking about the Buffalo Bills here in a moment on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, joining me now here on the Bill Barnwell Show, as promised, talked with Jake Trotter in the first segment about the Browns, another team in the AFC rising up the standings, a wildly successful season, the Buffalo Bills. And joining me to talk about the Bills is our friend Marcel Louis-Jacques. Marcel, how are you?
I am good. You know, it's just a lot of good energy right now in Western New York. Even if everything is closed, you can just kind of feel the city is different, man. You know, they compare it to a college town, and it really does feel like that, even with no dog in the fight. It's just like a lot of positive vibes resonating through Buffalo.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you about, because you said you have no dog in the fight. But I want to point out, I mentioned this with Chil Kapadia in the past, Marcel, the Bills made the playoffs once over the prior 15 years before you arrived on the Bills beat. Now, 2 years. You've been on this beat 2 years. Playoff appearance year one, division title year two. So I have to ask you, how much responsibility do you personally take for the Bills' success?
Oh, man. Zero responsibility. But I'll tell you what, if they keep on this rise and they win the Super Bowl next year or this year, I don't think that Bills fans will let me leave. Like, I don't even know if I want to leave, but I guarantee that if there's rumors, man, they might barricade my house. Cause I get a few of those little tidbits every day, every now and then, about their record since I got here and whatnot. And it's a really fun coincidence, man. Like, I'm just, I'm happy to be here during this like resurgence. Like it's a really cool time to be covering the Buffalo Bills.
Just saying, Panthers taking a step backwards in your absence. Just seems like correlation is causation here, but I will not going to press the point too much. Let's talk about the Bills. I mean, last year, 10-6, made the playoffs, major strides forward. This year, another huge leap forward, 11-3, division champs. So I want to ask you, let's start with that. Comparing the 2019 Bills to the 2020 Bills, most of the same players, some changes sort of on the margins here and there, but do you think the Bills are a significantly better team in 2020 than they were in 2019?
I think so. I mean, with the main statistical evidence of that is the number of points they're scoring per game. Mm-hmm. I believe it's up to 27, 28 per game from 19 and a half last year. And I mean, that was the main focal point. You know, Brandon Bean spoke about it kind of ad nauseum, that he watched that Texans game and was just kicking himself like that for not being able to do more. They wanted Stephon Diggs at the trade deadline and Minnesota wouldn't bite. He was sick that he didn't do enough to help this team score more points. And so that was the focal point this offseason. That's why I did what he had to do to get Stephon Diggs to Buffalo. But and so in that regard, they are a far better team. Mm-hmm. Defensively, on paper, you know, when you look at the numbers and, you know, yards allowed per game, scoring, they have taken a step back from last year. But a really interesting storyline that caught my attention a couple weeks ago after the Niners game was Tre'Davious White got on Zoom and kind of unprompted said, yeah, you know, we're starting to gel right now. And I was like, you know, it's week 13 and you're playing alongside a lot of the guys that you've been with for 4 years now, like Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Tremaine Edmonds, these guys, Jerry Hughes, like they've been the foundation of this defense since 2017. But looking a little further into it, Tremaine Edmonds was hurt for the first part of the season. Mm-hmm. Matt Milano has missed half the year, you know, stints on IR and just missing games with a groin and a chest, a pectoral injury. Star Lotulelei opted out. Josh Norman and Levi Wallace, like these past three games, I think are the first three games that they've played a full four quarters alongside each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been, even Tre'Davious White, even he missed the game. So like, this has been a banged up defense, and especially without a training camp to get used to the new pieces like Mario Addison, like Quentin Jefferson, Vernon Butler, AJ Klein, without all that time to get used to one another, they kind of had to do so on the fly this year and through a relatively difficult schedule. I mean, there's a 4 week span, including the bye, where they played three of the top five offenses in the NFL. Yeah. That's a tough ask for a defense that's still figuring itself out. But looking beyond the surface, they are playing, they're doing certain things at a very high level. Mm-hmm. They're holding defenses to, I think it's 26% on third downs this season. The red zone efficiency has been strong. They're taking the ball away. I think they lead the league in turnovers over the past several weeks in fourth quarter turnovers. Mm-hmm. So if you, it doesn't matter how you can allow a bunch of yards. If you're stopping teams on third down and you're taking the ball away, like you're going to set your offense up for success. You're going to set your team up for success. And that's what they've been able to do as of late.
Yeah. And I mean, look at the points per game have gone down. I mean, 17 points allowed to the Chargers, 24 to the Niners, 15 to the Steelers, really a dominant performance from the Bills in that game. And then 19 to the Broncos in the game a week ago. And like you said, forcing takeaways, looking a lot more like the defense that we saw a year ago. So, I mean, how confident are you that, you know, the first half of the season was a blip, and that Tre'Davious White is correct, and that this team is coming together to gel? I mean, do you think that it's just, you know, the reality of guys getting healthy, or do you think that it's, you know, that maybe using different players or having, you know, a different mindset on defense is sort of what's hopefully going to transform this team and sort of have this defense from the second half of the year kind of stick through into the playoffs?
I believe what Tre'Davious said. I think they are starting to gel once again. And that makes sense, right? Because like I said, there are so many of the same names here who have been here for at least three, at least three seasons. I mean, you include Matt Milano in that, and you can include Levi Wallace in that. And Harrison Phillips has been here since 2018. Hasn't been the greatest season for him, but like I said, a lot of familiar names. And then the guys that they brought in, with the exception of AJ Epenesa, aren't, you know, they're not just young guys. Like, these are veterans. These guys, like Addison's been in the league 10 years. Mm-hmm. AJ Klein's been in the league a long time. Josh Norman's been in the league a long time. Like, these are vets that, you know, eventually instinct is going to take over and they're going to figure it out. There was a scary 2-week stretch though, where, you know, it kind of looked like, you know, maybe this defense might've gotten a lot older, a lot faster than anybody thought. It was something that, speaking of the Panthers earlier, it was something that happened in Carolina in 2018, where, you know, over the, it seemed like the course of an off season, the defense aged 3, 4, 5 years, and it was time to hit the reset button. So there was a little bit of fear, I think, there that, you know, in the fan base, at least, there's a little bit of fear that that was about to happen. But that team, these players, they remain confident that, no, like, we know who we are. We're going to get it figured out. It's just going to, we might have to take our lumps with the world watching in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. In terms of this defense, you know, the numbers have been really great over the past couple of years. Second in DVOA in 2018, seventh in 2019. The 16th this year, but they've been improving over the course of the season, probably going to approach the top 10 by the end of the year. I mean, are you surprised there hasn't been more conversation about Leslie Frazier as a possible head coaching candidate, given how well the defense has played over the past few years?
Don't even get me started on that, man. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess, you know, you want to hear, you hear this is an offensive driven league. And so that's why anybody who's been in the same coffee shop as Sean McVay is getting an interview. That's why anybody, any offensive coach is getting a look. But I mean, Vic Fangio was just hired last year and he was a successful defensive coordinator up in Chicago. Leslie Frazier has led a top three defensive unit in 2018 and 19. And to the best of my knowledge, has not received an interview in that span, has not been mentioned in those rumors. And I asked him about it when the team promoted him to assistant head coach this offseason. I asked him if it was ever disappointing, ever frustrating. And he said it was. Like, it was a little confusing, but especially since, you know, they've been able to accomplish what he's been able to accomplish. And that when he goes to the combine and the Senior Bowl and events like that, that his peers come up to him and say, like, wow, like, really respect the job that you guys have done up there, you know, really like what's going on. And so for his peers to recognize that, but for team ownerships not to extend that feeling, yeah, it's a little weird. And I think the Bills are, it's a little odd. You don't really see teams doing this, but the Bills want him to get interviews. The Bills want that for him. That's why they promoted him to assistant head coach. And that's why Kim Pegula has been a very vocal proponent that he deserves that opportunity whenever he wants it. But I am a little surprised that he hasn't. And you know, people also want to say, you know, he wasn't a successful head coach the first time around, and that's also garbage. We can talk for an hour about coaches with losing seasons who get hired, you know, who get second jobs, who get third jobs. And it's disappointing to see. Hopefully people wake up to it, because I mean, he's an excellent coach. He's also a good leader. Mm-hmm. And I think people have a lot of respect for Leslie Frazier, both, you know, locally and within the team and organization and throughout the league.
Yeah. The thing that I always come back to with Leslie Frazier, when I look at this team, look at this defense, is how many of the players they have, like you said, who aren't rookies, who are veterans who are coming in to join this organization, how many players come to Buffalo and get better? You know, like they get players who are solid pros and they are stars in Buffalo. They get guys like Matt Milano, a mid-round pick nobody was expecting to be a solid linebacker, who is now, has been a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker when healthy over the past years. You get Tre'Davious White, the guy who's taken at the bottom of the first round, who's one of the top two or three cornerbacks in football. I mean, across the roster, you know, on the defensive side of the ball at every level, it just feels like the Bills get guys and make them either a little better or significantly better.
And that's their, that's the sales pitch from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. That's the sales pitch, is come to Buffalo and be the best version of yourself. Like, there's no, there's no distractions out here. You're not going to get your, I mean, knock on wood, because, you know, I don't really want to write this story, but you're not going to have players caught at the strip club in Buffalo. You're not going to have players, you know, caught out doing things that you're not supposed to. There's just not those kind of activities out here to do, especially in the wintertime. There's a couple feet of snow on the ground at any given time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's just, you're not really going to want to leave. You're going to come here. You're going to focus on football. You're going to get high level coaching. And they stress, they really stress family environment. And that's kind of what they want Buffalo to be. They don't want a bunch of choir boys, but they do want to build kind of that wholesome culture here where, you know, you come here, you focus on family, you focus on football. Mm-hmm. And nothing else. And that's why you're seeing, like I said, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, guys who are cast off by other teams come here and thrive. A guy like Isaiah McKenzie, who's bouncing around Denver's practice squad, not a team known for deep wide receiver court.
Sure.
Bouncing on Denver's practice squad, comes here, has a legitimate role as that gadget jet sweep type of receiver. You see John Feliciano come here and play his way into probably a pretty major contract. You see Jerry Hughes, a cast off former first round pick, mm-hmm. become a decade long member, you know, start a decade long tenure in Buffalo. I think he's top five in franchise history in sacks. Like it's a huge selling point for them, that they're, for this coaching staff, their ability to take players young or old and give them a second chance, because they thrive on that chip on your shoulder, that, hey man, like, they didn't want you, come here and prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. It's kind of it just really embodies the attitude of the city. The team embodies the attitude of the city itself, because the city is so, you see it online a lot. They're a proud city. This is a proud city. It takes a lot of heat nationally, no pun intended, because there's literally no heat in the city right now, but it takes a lot of heat nationally. They're the butt of a lot of jokes. So they're proud, they're defensive, and they're hell bent on proving people wrong. And that kind of carries over to the energy in that organization in Orchard Park.
Well, speaking of proving people wrong, I feel like you know where I'm going to go with this. We got to talk about Josh Allen here, because I don't know. You have followed Josh Allen closely over the past couple of years. I've watched a lot of Josh Allen, written a lot about Josh Allen. I am happy to take an L here. I'm happy to be honest about what my expectations were about Josh Allen. I watched the tape last year. I saw certainly improvement. No doubt Josh Allen was a much better quarterback in 2019 than he was in 2018. But if you told me Josh Allen was going to be this guy in 2020, I would have laughed at you. I would have been like, you know, there is a scenario where that happens, I guess, but I can't imagine that universe. Like, I just, for him to be if he turned into an average quarterback, I would have been like, okay, like, you know, like, maybe things happen. But to be a great quarterback for the vast majority of the 2020 season, I'm shocked. So I got to ask you, Marcel, how surprised are you that Josh Allen has turned into, you know, a legitimate top five NFL quarterback here in his third season?
I am not surprised that he is good this year. I am a little bit surprised as to just how good. I'm surprised that he ended up being this good, like, for such a long period of the season. Mm-hmm. Because he passed the eye test. And that sounds like kind of a cop-out for the arguments about his completion percentage and his decision-making and yada-da-da. But he just passed the eye test. Like, I watched more football, more Josh Allen than, you know, a lot of people who criticized him. Mm-hmm. And he won games at the end of the day. Like, he could absolutely be banging his head against the brick wall for three quarters. Don't get me wrong. Like, he would make decisions through three quarters that were like, dude, you want to win this, right? But then in the fourth quarter, all the stuff he was trying to do just worked. Mm-hmm. It was just like, okay, like he figures it out with it on the line. And it's like, man, if he could put that fourth quarter and spread it across all like the first three, then the Bills might have something here. Mm-hmm. And even as kind of below average as his numbers were last year, I mean, he was still dead last in completion percentage in 2019. It was such a marked improvement from 2018 that you figured, if he continues to improve along that trajectory, then yeah, I think he's going to be good. I did not expect him to be a superstar right now, though. Like, I'm not gonna pump fake for y'all like that. Like, I did not expect the superstar level Josh Allen. Matter of fact, I'll eat crow. I put out a video on Instagram this summer saying that he doesn't need to be a superstar for this team to win games. And that was wrong, because they put the ball in his hands and they told him, go win us games this year. They've needed that on several occasions, especially early in the season. And he delivered time and time again. And now he's at the point where, you know, it's hard to, if you're a defensive coordinator, I don't know how you plan for him. He can still beat you on the ground. He can beat you through the air. He can tear apart man coverage. He can pick apart your zone coverage, find the holes in your zone coverage. He can beat the blitz. Like, he can beat the, you know, if you put seven DBs back, like, there's not a lot of, there aren't a lot more options, I think, for coordinators to throw at him. He's reaching that level that he's very hard to game plan for. And especially with they added Stephon Diggs, and you figured, okay, eventually this is going to be a good combo. Mm-hmm. You know, Diggs, he'll probably get 1,000 yards this season, but maybe like a, you know, 1,100 tops. I mean, if he plays the next two games, Stephon Diggs could end up with 1,600 yards this year. I didn't expect that to pop so quickly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the long way to say, not surprised that he's good, a little surprised that he is this good and has been this good really throughout the entire season.
I think the last 2 weeks are really instructive in evaluating him, because, like, go back to that Steelers game. First half of that game, he's struggling. He's getting hit. The Steelers are in his face. You know, he is having a bad game, and it's not really his fault. Like, I think the Steelers were not, you know, were a great defense and we're giving him trouble, and they give quarterbacks a lot of trouble. But, you know, I don't know if 2019 Josh Allen recovers from that in the second half of that game. Maybe he continues to struggle for the entirety of that game, the way he did against the Patriots in that game in week 4, right around week 4 last year. But we saw, you know, Josh Allen found something that worked. They got a connection going with Stephon Diggs, and Josh Allen was great for the rest of that game. And then against the Broncos last week, you know, I think the biggest difference between Josh Allen from a year ago and the Josh Allen who's playing now is, even last year when he was playing well, it was almost like he was fighting himself at times. Like, you'd watch his footwork, you'd watch him make plays, and he was, you know, a little frantic at times. And even if he got to the right decision, which he's really good at making the right decision and getting the ball to the right receiver, you know, his footwork would slip and he'd miss a pass that was open, or he would just be a little out of control, and something that should have been an easy completion became a tough completion. And in that Broncos game, I can think of very few quarterbacks this year who were more in control from start to finish. Like, he looked like he knew what was coming. He was delivering balls, whether it was on the run, whether it was in the pocket, whether it was, you know, to any portion of the field, every throw was right on a dime, like hitting a receiver in stride. And, you know, it was his best QBR as a pro against the Broncos last week in that sort of, a division clinching game. It just feels like he's a guy who's in total control, of his work as a quarterback. You know, the footwork doesn't slip, the arm angle doesn't slip. He knows what to do in every situation, and he's always had the athleticism to execute when he knows what's coming. So I feel like he is such a, you know, he's such an in complete control now relative to the guy we saw a year ago, really, especially 2 years ago.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's fair. So because he did look frantic at times, and you saw it. There's probably no better explanation than that, the Texans game, the wild card game. It was frantic. Trying to do too much, when you look at his past, you know, he didn't go to some powerhouse high school or prep school. He went to junior college. He went to Wyoming. That's, you know, he's not throwing to four or five star athletes. Matter of fact, if Wyoming got a four star athlete, I'm sure it would be a, you know, game breaking news. Like they might shut down, they might shut down to celebrate. Like that's a huge get for a program like that. No offense, but like it is, college recruiting is what it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's used to having to do so much by himself that whenever kind of the pressure was turned up on him a little bit, I think he tended to revert back to that. Mm-hmm. But I think he's really been all in on trusting the guys around him. That's why you're not seeing him tuck the ball as much. I mean, he can still do it. You saw the 24-yard touchdown against the Broncos, but he's not fighting for, you know, he's not fighting for first downs. He's letting his routes progress. Mm-hmm. He's dumping the ball off. He's throwing the ball away. And that's coming as a relief to so many Bills fans. Cause there's this like never say die attitude about him last year where, I mean, he is going to fight until, you know, the blades of grass are tickling his arm. Mm-hmm. He's still going to try to throw that thing. And you're not seeing that so much this year. And it's, we talk MVP. I think he's got the third best odds right now, but and he very much belongs in that conversation. Like 100%. There was some skepticism in September, understandably, but there is no doubt, man. Like this guy is an MVP candidate. And I don't think if he won the award, I don't think it would be some massive upset over Mahomes or Rodgers. Like, I think any of those three guys are viable options.
I think you deserve it. You know, like, I don't know if he's my choice necessarily, but, you know, if someone voted for Josh Allen, it'd be hard to argue the point. Like, the guy is winning games for this team. And even last year, you could sit here and say, okay, well, great defense, you know, that's winning them games. Josh Allen's making plays for sure. But, you know, without the defense, Josh Allen wouldn't be the focal point of this team. It's a team effort, and Josh Allen's not carrying this team to victories. You can't say that anymore. Like, look at the Seahawks game. That was the most pass happy offense we've seen maybe in a single game in the history of the National Football League in terms of the rate at which they call pass plays against a great team, or against a Seahawks team that's going to make the playoffs. Josh Allen carried that team to a victory in that game. He was great in that game, and he's been great for the vast majority of this season. So I think absolutely, you know, when it comes to MVP discussion, I couldn't fault anybody who seriously considered Josh Allen or straight up voted for Josh Allen in that race. And you mentioned Stephon Diggs in your answer. And I want to get to sort of the two key people who you can credit Josh Allen's improvement with. And that's the wrong way to put it, because it's hard to frame this because it sounds like you're slighting Josh Allen, and I don't want to do that. I think Josh Allen has made improvement independent of the two guys I'm about to name. But in terms of Stephon Diggs and Brian Daboll, you know, how much of what you've seen from Allen this year is the product of having those two guys around him? And how much of what you've seen in terms of his improvement is just Josh Allen straight up improving on his own, independent of the receivers, independent of his offensive coordinator?
I think it's a healthy dose of both. Like, you can look at any successful quarterback. There's no quarterback probably in history that you're looking at and saying like he's doing everything by himself. Mm-hmm. Like a successful quarterback, the guys like Peyton Manning, like Tom Brady, even Aaron Rodgers, like Mahomes is right now. They have had front offices that build around them. They've had coaching staffs that help develop them. They've had teammates to help carry the load. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Brady so much on offense, but at one point he did have Wes Welker. He did have Randy Moss. He did have he had names at receiver. For sure. He had Gronk. Like it's not like, you know, if you put Mahomes on the Jets, is he still Mahomes? I don't think so. So like, I think it's a healthy dose of his personal development and the teammates and coaching around him. Diggs, certainly. I mean, I don't know if in his career, maybe I can ask him tomorrow, but I don't know if Josh in his career has trusted a receiver like he trusts Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was from day one. It was, hey, if I'm in trouble, like I'm probably going to look your way. If there's a sliver of a window, like I trust you inherently that you're going to go make a play. And that kind of stuff, that matters a lot to Stephon Diggs. Like he is, it's part of the reason why the relationship in Minnesota fell apart. Mm-hmm. It was a kind of dissolvement of the trust there. But for a guy like Stephon Diggs to see Josh Allen say, "Hey man, like I'm going to throw the ball your way. If it looks like you might be open, I'm going to throw it your way. Cause I trust you to make a play." Diggs is going to do everything possible to make that play. And with his talent, he's probably going to make the play. So that has a huge role. He is a guy, you know, he gets the ball in his hands and, you know, he can, if he's got a sliver of space, he can make people miss. You know, there's a couple ankles that he's probably got dangling in a keychain somewhere in his locker room that he's been snatching them all year. And, but from Brian Dable's perspective, mm-hmm. I mean, Josh, they couldn't, it doesn't get talked about enough how good of a job the Bills have done building a sense of stability around Josh Allen. This is the same coaching staff for the third year in a row around him. Same quarterback coach, same head coach, same offensive coordinator, same front office. You know, they're building stability around him, and no other first round quarterback in that draft class can say that outside of maybe Lamar. Mm-hmm. But Baker's been, you know, the Browns have been Brownsing with Baker. The Jets have been Jetsing with Darnold. I don't even know where Josh Rosen is right now. I think Tampa.
He's like, on the Tampa practice
squad. But I think, yeah. So like Josh Allen, like the fact that Brian Dable has not only been allowed for 3 years to build that relationship with Josh Allen, but to fully develop his playbook. Because it's hard to you don't just come in your first year and as a coordinator and say, this is what I want to do on offense, and then snap your fingers and that's what you're doing. Like it takes a while to fully integrate that kind of playbook and fully open it up. And so now here in year three, that playbook is fully open. Like you're seeing a side of Brian Dable that we have never seen before in any other stop. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's important. He is deservedly getting head coaching interest. He will probably be offered a job. I wouldn't be surprised, especially if a team's got a young, like a quarterback that needs developing. His work with Josh Allen is probably, that's a huge selling point right there. I'm looking right at Jacksonville, but, you know, we talked about Leslie Frazier being well-liked. Dave's is well-liked as well. He's beloved mm-hmm. with his players, in his locker room, in the community. He grew up out here, went to high school out in Hamburg, you know, a town over from Orchard Park. Mm-hmm. Like they love Brian Dable here. This is home for him. And he's known like for the way he can build trust with his players. You know, mm-hmm. he's a guy who he FaceTimes instead of calls or texts. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll call up Josh Allen at 9 o'clock at night to talk plays or to discuss, you know, X's and O's. An example, going back to that Broncos game. Mm-hmm. So the Bills score, you know, they score two touchdowns in like 16, 17 seconds, right? They score, force a fumble, return it. Broncos get the ball back and go three and out. Mm-hmm. On the first play of that Bills next drive, Josh Allen goes 55 yards to Stephon Diggs. And that was Josh Allen's call. That wasn't Brian Dable saying, let's take a shot. That was Josh Allen on the sideline saying, hey, like, I like this matchup. I think this is what we should do. And Dable saying, yeah, I trust you. Go ahead and run it. And that's the level of trust they have in one another, and the level of respect they have in one another. So he's you know, it is an equal effort. You know, Josh obviously has to put in the work. He has to be the guy. He has to make the throws. But Diggs has given him somebody to trust and throw to. Nothing, you know, not to short Beasley or John Brown, but Diggs has given him that you know, quarterback's best friend type of receiver. And Brian Dable has brought that respect, trust, stability, and confidence in his quarterback to help him reach that point.
Mm-hmm. Have to admit, I cover the league pretty closely. I try to keep track of everyone. When you mentioned Josh Rosen, you caught me for a second. I was like, like, can I sneak in a trip to our labs before I have to answer where Josh Rosen is? Thankfully, you correctly mentioned that he plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on their practice squad. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it's going to be really interesting. And I actually was talking with someone about this a couple of days ago. I want to know what you think. Let's say Dable does get a head coaching job. What do you think the Bills do with their offensive coordinator spot?
This is something they haven't had to do in the past. They haven't had to worry about losing coordinators in the past. Conventional is like, I would think they promote from within. Mm-hmm. I would think that they, you know, Ken Dorsey looks like a pretty popular pick. Wouldn't even be surprised if, maybe they look at a guy like Chad Hall, wide receiver coach, what he's been able to do with that receiver group. You talk about guys that are beloved by the players. Stephon Diggs called Chad Hall the best coach he's ever had, like the best position coach he's ever had. And that's a major way to keep your star happy there. Mm-hmm. Make sure that his favorite position coach is around for a while. Young, though, not sure if it wouldn't be the first time that a young coach got a big opportunity. Mm-hmm. But, as far as this coaching staff goes as a whole, not as much experience as the other guys. So I think probably Dorsey would be the favorite there. But I think they would look to promote in-house just to keep that level of stability around, or maybe going back to some of the guys who worked with, looking back at some guys who worked with McDermott and Bean in Carolina, because, there has to be at least four pipeline moves in any given offseason, player, coach, whatever, there has to be four. So I wouldn't be shocked if Marty Herney found his way in Buffalo in some capacity, man.
Just seems like it. Just seems inevitable that the Bills are going to bring in some people from Carolina. Let me finish with this, because I want to ask about this as someone who's taking the temperature of Bills fans on a daily basis. Now, there probably will not be fans in the stands, unfortunately. But the Bills are getting their first home playoff game since December of 1996. Chad Hall was a child. Josh Allen, not born yet. It was a long time ago. They'll probably be favorites in that game, depending on who they play. But you'd figure the Bills at home, great football team, are going to be favorites. I know they've taken a big step forward. I know they've won the division. I know that meant a lot to Bills fans. But where do you think expectations are now? If the Bills don't win a playoff game, do you think fans will see this season as a disappointment? But like, what would have to happen for fans to sit here at the end of the year and say, you know what? We feel great. We got to accomplish what we wanted to accomplish this year, and we're in great shape heading into 2021.
I think if they win a playoff game, that fans would be at baseline satisfied. They'd be satisfied. They'd be like, okay, this was good. Because they won the AFC East. That was important. And if they sweep the Patriots especially, that'll ease the blow of anything that happens in the postseason. But, I talked about the clairvoyant pessimism with Pablo Torre a few months back, that so many fans out here just kind of want to be the ones to say, well, I saw this coming when something bad happens. You're starting to see that fade a little bit. You're seeing a lot of Super Bowl talk. And I don't think it's outlandish. I think this team can compete for the AFC conference. Like, they can win the AFC. And if you can win the AFC, if you can win your conference, you can win the Super Bowl. So I think it's fair to call them a Super Bowl contender here. I don't know if that's the expectation like it is in like Kansas City right now, that I don't think winning the Super Bowl is an expectation like it is with Chiefs fans. But I there is a baseline expectation to win a playoff game. Because I think if you win the AFC East, you host a playoff game, you do these things that all offseason you said that you want to do and are your goals, and then you go one and done or one and out in the playoffs, fans may or may not, they'll react how they'll react. But the reality is that's a disappointing season. That'd be a disappointing season. You do all this just to end the way that you did in 2019 and 2017. No, that's a disappointing season. Mm-hmm. So I think anything beyond that, you could probably say like you'll tip your hat to the Bills. One playoff win is you're probably satisfied. You're like, okay, well, there's obvious progress. You win two games. You win both of your home playoff games if you're the two seed. I think you call that a successful year. You make it to that AFC title game. That's a successful year. And then beyond that, a conference championship or a Super Bowl title, that is grounds for a parade in Buffalo. I got on the phone. I was on the phone with Cornelius Bennett last week. And he said, you know, if this team actually wins a Super Bowl, we're in a pandemic, but there is no way you're keeping people off the street, that you might need to call the National Guard. And considering 3,000 people waited for this team at the airport at 1 a.m. in 30-degree weather after a division title. Yeah, I think that's safe. I don't have to lock my doors. Man, I just got the PS5 in today, man. Like, I'll lock my doors and sit on the steps. Like, I'll be scared. I'll be scared for my safety if they win a Super Bowl out here, man. Like, I don't think people are going to know how to act.
I can't believe that you would mention getting a PS5 when you know Charles McDonald is still waiting for his PS5 after all these weeks.
Hey, you know, I discussed with Charles already because FedEx is the one that dropped it off. So I did discuss with them how to successfully get a package from him. He said to wait outside. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that I met the delivery man in the parking lot. I'm not exaggerating at all. I got the notification. I went downstairs and I was like, yeah, hi, how you doing? Thank you, sir. But I can proudly announce Charles is copping on, I think he said this weekend. So, you know, for everybody waiting on the end of that saga, I think there's a happy ending here.
That's what you could say that. But again, until you actually have the handoff of that package, anything and everything is possible. But you're smart.
Shout out to my man, Charles. He deserves that. He deserves that. You ever want to come to, he deserves it, man.
Now, again, you're just a professional. You're smart. You paid attention. You read your keys. You knew that the guy was there. You went downstairs and got it. That's just smart. That's just being a professional package receiver. That's what you do now.
And it also helps that the guys who deliver to this block in Buffalo are Bills fans. So I think I'm safe in knowing that they're going to want to talk a little shop.
There you go.
The package was getting here for no other reason than to talk a little shop for a minute or two. So shout out to those guys, man. Y'all are working your butts off throughout this entire, you know, always, but especially now.
Mm-hmm. See, now just talk shop with the FedEx people. Talk shop with us here on the Bill Barnwell Show. People want to listen to more of you, or they want to read more of you. Marcel, where can they do that?
Twitter account's always jumping at Marcel_LJ. Also, everything I write, everything I do professionally, it's on the Buffalo Bills team page. You know, ESPN, go to the NFL tab, go to the teams tab, click on Bills, you know the drill. Subscribe for there. You're going to get alerts. Every story, every breaking news piece, every roster move, everything to keep you as up to date as possible. That's what we're going to try to do here.
Awesome. Marcel, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. You know, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks so much to my guests today, Jake Trotter and Marcel Louis Jacques, covering the Browns and the Bills, respectively, for ESPN. They do great work. Check them out and hope you guys are having a great holiday. We have another podcast coming for you next week after Christmas. So enjoy the 4-day slate of games. It's crazy how many days in a row we have football in 2020, but enjoy that. We'll be back next week with a preview of all the week 17 actions. Thanks so much for listening, and more on the way next week.